Now it is my privilege to introduce tonight's speaker, so please offer a warm Valley Group welcome to Craig.
I'm doing this right. You might want to tighten that one part up here. Okay. Can you hear me? Nice. My name's Craig and I'm an alcoholic. If you really need an ashtray that's outside and you have to steal it, let me know. I'll get on Amazon and order you one and have it here next week. One. So someone's got to choose who's going to be that person. I was asked to do this 3 months ago, and I don't do a bunch of meetings. I realize that. Tonight my wife said, have you ever done a 45-minute meeting? Do you know how to do that? So I did that one. That wasn't 45. So I figured the two meetings I've done, neither one of them were 45 minutes. So I'm going to really have to stretch it out a little bit if nobody minds or doesn't mind. I had 3 months to work on this too. Bill said, hey, going to have this meeting and it's going to be in November. And I think it must have been July or whenever it was he asked me to do that. And I'm just kind of... And as the months went by, I thought, well, I better start working on it. And I spent a lot of time alone. I drive a truck, so I did the meeting 3,000 some amount of times in the truck. And I straightened this up a little bit, got with my sponsor, cut that down. Same thing, go to the gym, I'm on the elliptical 3,000 more times. And I'm in the jacuzzi. And I did it 3,000 more times. And now I don't know what the hell to say, but I'm going to do my best. I had a list. My sponsor says, do a list. So I did a list, and I looked for the list, and I looked for the list, and I finally found it. It said one thing on there. Don't act like a moron. Okay, so you know where I stand. My name's Craig, and I'm an alcoholic. I'm going to point that out. I come from a basic family of drunks. I had a bad drunk and I had a good drunk. And the good drunk took care of the bad drunk. And I really, really admire that stepfather of mine because he put up with that bad end of things. It wasn't the thing for me to do, nothing I would like or anything like that. So I basically, give or take, started drinking at a certain part of my childhood. And probably about the last 4 years of it, I was in the system of sort, be it county, court, or state. And that was okay. I was just as wild and enjoyed every waking moment of it. I get out and I drink. At one point, I was in the service for a little bit. I don't remember that. And as the years went by, I drank. I was a happy drunk. All I wanted to do was be a happy drunk. And I had two parents that were role models. And they're both drunks. And my mother was a certain role model, and I didn't like that one. So I took the right. I took my stepfather. He was happy. He's just a happy guy. He enjoyed his alcohol, and so did I. Alcohol was good. I was a very little person. And I was a big person when I started drinking. It just meant a lot. And I'm not going to get into too much of that because there is some things I do want to talk about. I can tell you that I've been into two halfway houses. I was in both of them for a year. The first one is, I think the first halfway house is, I'm in the county and I went in at 130 pounds and not really too healthy. And 6 months later, I'm 175 pounds. I'm being knocked out of Redwood City at midnight. My pants don't fit anymore. The shirt won't button up. And someone else in property decided they needed my sneakers more than I did. Yeah. It's the way it works. And I went into a halfway house in San Francisco because I had burned every bridge I could possibly burn. Nobody would answer the phone. I tried during that time in the county. They wouldn't answer. I think she wouldn't take a collect call. Maybe if I had paid for the call, it would have been different. I don't know. I went to this halfway house, and I'm not going to get into a whole bunch about it. I know they have recovery homes. Halfway houses aren't recovery homes. Halfway houses are trying to get you halfway into being a decent human being, and then you're popped out of there, and they go into the next one. And I got some stuff out. I got a job out of it. I ended up getting a car out of it after the year. But I walked out of there, and I went down to the Hate and went right to a dark bar and started drinking shots. Because this is what I do. I like shots. And I like dark bars, too. And I like dark bars with poor people because I feel so much better about myself. You know, it really was my thing. And that went on for some years, you know. I had a job. I have a relative in the garment industry, and he gave me a job. He had always told me you couldn't get into anything he couldn't get me out of. He never told me you could. He said to me, he says, there's nothing you can do or have done I have not done. And this multi-millionaire, very successful Democratic supporter, and I am this. He hasn't done the things I've done, but he got me a job in his factory, and I drank a lot at the corner bar that I've seen all my life. I was a very young person in this garment industry, and these people, we would play the pinball out there with the balls and the real pinball balls, and I would watch them drink, and now I was that person. Now I got to do that now. And I did it. And I'm so crappy at my job. There got to be a point where they would punch me in and out because I'd be at that bar. And they didn't want me doing any cutting of garments because I sucked. And it's when you cut a garment, it's kind of like it makes its way up that suck thing. And basically, I got paid to not work and drink a lot. There was a bottom to it, you know, 3 years later. And now... Yeah, 3 years later, I'm kind of making payments on my bar bill. I used to have my son overnight on Saturdays. We're down to 3 hours, and I buy him a toy, and he's happy I drop him off. I'm living in my parents' basement. It's actually like a den. My stepfather had his drums in there and pictures of people, and there was a couch. It might have been about 5 feet long and 3 feet wide. And there was a dog that had a urinary traction infection, and he had more rights in that house than I did, by far. So it was rough. And I went and asked for help for that from that uncle. Actually, no, I did not ask him for help. I didn't have the kahunas to do it. I sent my shop steward to do it. And he had made arrangements. He says, I know what you're going through, and this is how we're going to handle it. We're going to send you to the hospital for 30 days. And, you know, 30 days, and he was going to pay cash because we want anybody to know if, you know, there was a problem. And he said, well, this is what we want to do. I owe the bar a lot of money. I've been making payments on it, but it just seems to be multiplying all the time. We're going to take care of that. We're going to take care of that bar bill. And I'm going to give you money to drink and get it out of your system in the next couple days. And tell me that's not the greatest. I mean, you know, he's going to pay me, and he's going to pay me to be there, too. You know, I'm still going to get a paycheck, but there's no difference between the non-work I was doing and the being in the hospital. I was getting a paycheck regardless. It didn't matter. I went and did this 30 days. And I got out of there and I got drunk. And this man was very disappointed in me. And this is a guy, and I didn't get into the whole childhood issues thing, but I've done some stuff that he had to reach out and be that powerful to do it in my younger days. And we were at this point, and I did this, and he was really unhappy with me. And he got sick. He got sick. I don't even want to get into this. He got sick, and I had a chance to make amends. Amends. Hello? Go ahead. I'm going to pin the next one on my chest. It would help with the microphone next time. But he had gotten sick, and I went to Palo Alto to see him. And once again, I'm going to emphasize, he's a big deal. He is a really, really big deal. And I went to the hospital in Palo Alto. I'm in my car. I'm now, just to back up a little bit, I am now in a second halfway house. What had happened? The 30 days went by. I went out the door. I got drunk, sick, back in the hospital. They said, are you willing to do what we asked you to do in the first place? I did. The next day, I'm in a halfway house. So I'm in this halfway house for just a little bit, maybe a month or two. And he got very ill. I went out to the parking. I went out there and went in the parking lot, and I just didn't have it to go in there. It scared me. And he came back, and he died. He died 2 days later. Carried that one through sobriety because I stayed sober. I was in this halfway house and had a lot of support there. It was basically a halfway house where you go there and you work and you pay your rent. And I think they had meetings. I don't remember a lot about it. I do not think it was heavily spiritual. I don't think it was very big in the big book itself. It was, for me, it turned out to be more or less a very, very start for my my new recovery. But, you know, time came around, and about 30 days comes by, and the sad thing is he died, and I don't even hate to say good news, he left me money. And when you get money and you're sober for less than 60 days, it's decision time. And the thought of losing him like I lost him scared me, because this guy got me out of a lot. He could get me out of a lot. He could do it for the rest of my life, but now he was gone. And it really came time to make the decisions I make. I liked where I was. Things got better. I stayed sober. I stayed in this halfway house through the year. My son came regularly. Now instead of the 4 hours, I had a car to go get him. In the halfway house, they gave him, we used to call privileges, he got the upstairs privilege for a night. And that was just a really, really big thing. And when I left the house, we all kind of went down to this bed and breakfast place and that sort of thing. And my son would come and spend the night with me there, and it would be a, he gets refrigerator privileges. So we're just really, him and I were really growing well together. And time went on. The years came about. I hate to say it out loud, but I got married. My son, I ended up getting my son. Basically, his mother, my first wife, and I we ran together, and then she got pregnant, and we got the bright idea to get married, but other than that, we were running partners. She had her issues, you know, and things had gone on, and we made arrangements for him to come to live with me. I had to get out of that job. They're still paying me not to do it. Instead of being drunk and sleeping under the tables, under the altar sweat and everything else, I would do sit-ups, curls, and I would press myself between two cutting tables and do sit-ups. And this is what I did. I got paid for it. It was just, you know, keep him out of trouble type of thing. But I needed to get out of there because that bar down the street was there. And it was a bar that I was there. I was 5 years old and I was there. And it was a bar. I was 30 years old, 29 years old, 28 years old, and I was there. And now I'm working here with a couple years of sobriety or less, and I had to get out of there. You just kind of say to yourself, well, you got some money, and you got to get out of here. What do you want to do for a living? And I really ruled out a lot of stuff. But as a child, I liked things with steering wheels. I borrowed a lot, you know, used a lot. And I went to truck driving school, of all things. I mean, you know, who goes to truck driving school? I do. And I had gotten a job. I paid for the school with my money. I still have watched the money. My credit was getting good. I bought a brand new 1985 Hyundai, their very first, with the little stick shift. The best thing about it was the stereo, but it's great stereo in this crappy little Korean car. And I've got a brand new one. I'm really scoring now. I'm really, really getting up there. And So I got a job. I had went to an application, and these guys hired me, and it turned out to be that it was in the delivering chemicals, and it was delivering toilet paper and paper towels and everything. They were laundry type of thing, and they liked me a lot, and I did real well. I remember the first time I actually ended up in this truck coming down here from South City. The driver they had a drinking problem, and he came to work drunk, so he was doing that when I was doing the little box truck, and it was now my time to do my Class A driver's license, and they filled that thing up, and I got down here, and I think it's Porterville. I'm 62 years old and not all there, but I do remember it was somewhere here in the valley, because I delivered some Fresno stuff and that sort of thing, and I got to this hotel, and I remember going around the hotel, and I was going to get in the back, and the guy comes screaming and screaming on us. He stopped the truck, points up, all his wires are there, and I'm like this close to tearing them right out of there. So it's the time of, you know, it was finally time I was going to have to back up that truck. I ain't backed up a truck yet. I mean, I really haven't, especially I'm going to have to back it up and turn it and this and that sort of thing. That was my beginning of my career of driving truck. Made some friends. Got another job. You have to excuse me. I'm sniffling a little bit. I got the job I have now, and it's been a blessing. It was a top notch job, and I only got it because somebody liked me. That's the way it was in those days, and that was incredible. I had that job, but the problem is now I think of getting that job and et cetera, I'm probably 3 years sober. I'm not going to meetings. I've never read the big book. I had one. They gave me one in the hospital, and everybody signs their name to it, and they put their phone number in it. Well, I didn't call them drunk. But I do know this book exists, because I think it was 6 years ago when I first got sober, my daughter had mailed it to me. And I gave it to a newcomer, the real nice guy that kind of hung in a little bit, and I gave him the book because it really didn't mean anything to me. Phone numbers. I was sober now. I wasn't going to give him a call, and he could use it. But it was the big book. It just, you know, I just got sober. I didn't get any sobriety. I didn't work any steps. Things were good. My credit was good. I had a car. I had my son. Marriage sucked. I won't get into that one. Let's see. And then I got the opportunity to come down here very early into it and buy a home or open a terminal here. And I got the opportunity to do that. And that would have been in probably 90, oh, I don't know. I want to say 91 or so. And I had come down here and I hooked up with the guys from the Alano Club. And the guys I hooked up with basically, you know, I guess they did stuff too, but more or less we come to the noon meeting and then we pick up chairs in the noon meeting. We put a couple tables down and we play poker. And that's, you know, and we had the Super Bowl parties together, sober. And we played poker. I mean, I just didn't work any steps. And I didn't mention this early on, especially after I had gotten married and the pressure of having my son. I was angry. I'm just pissed off. You know, more or less everything should be my way. I have done as much as I do. I am responsible for paying for everything here. And, you know, I won't use the word asshole, but, you know, if I want to be one, I'm going to be one. And that's just how my, that was me being sober. It was me being sober without sobriety. I left here in 1995, 10 years sober. I was really into it. You know, I had made a gold medallion with a number 10 on it with a diamond in the middle. We all did. We had bracelets. I don't know if any of you know Clyde. Clyde used to be around. And he was one of my poker buddies. And we all did that sort of thing. You know, so I left here with a 10-year chip around my neck, made a 14-karat gold. I went back east, and I plopped my family in Maine. Her mother was extremely ill, and I got the opportunity to open a yard in Philly, and And I think immediately she threw my son out, so I had my son with me. She never did like him, and now that she's in Maine and I'm in Philly, no reason to leave him with her. And I got him, and I was pissed off about it. And I want to think, when I give or take, I don't know, 96, April or May, I went back to that dark bar, and it was perfect. It was actually a perfect bar. I had this apartment, and I got a raise because my son got thrown out of the house and he was going to be living with me, so my boss gave me a $3 hour raise to cover bills, and I just went over to this bar and I just started drinking shots, and it made sense to me. Amazing, because you know what? I wasn't pissed off about anything so much. You know, all the things that were going on, I could take them with a grain of salt. You know, she's a what? You know, he's a what? A couple of shots, and that was it. And this was a dark bar. It was a dark bar out of Philly. And I want to think maybe, give or take, maybe 4 weeks after I started drinking, I'm in a bar on the other side of town, and I'm driving home. I'm pretty drunk, actually very drunk. And somewhere down the line, I went around the corner too fast and kind of into someone's fence and into their tree and into their bricks. And I must have backed out of there. And this is right around in the same area, too. And this is a neighbor, give or take, more or less, a block or two. And I pulled out of there and I went home and I parked the car. And you know, I never really realized what damage is. You know, this won't be the first time or the last time I will do this in the 17 years that I went out for. But this particular one was the first. And, you know, you go home, you go to bed, and you think about it, and you wake up, and no. And you go out there and just, no. And you know, I don't know if you've ever been in Philadelphia. Everything's a row house and a brick. Everything's cement. There's not a warm thing about it. And I went out there, and this car is creamed. Fenders, doors, everything is just wiped out. And then I did the whole no, no, no thing. And I'm stomping, and I'm jumping around. And no. And then I do the thing where I walk away for about 5 or 6 feet and say, no, and turn around. You lost me, didn't you? And I turn around, and it's still totaled. And I haven't dealt with this for a long time. I don't know what happened. I have no idea what happened. Most likely, I got in an accident. So I go into my house, and, you know, I should not know what to do about this. I should not know who to call or who to say or this and that. But the damnedest thing came up to me, and it's something I had a long time ago, and I became an insta-liar. I don't know if you're aware what an insta-liar is, but this is a person that has stayed sober too long, hasn't done steps, and now wants to get out of shit. That's what an insta-liar is. Liar is, and that's what I was. I came up with 3 separate lies, because one would not do it all the way around. I did one for the insurance company, because they're most important. I told them about the 2 girls that were driving my car on the way from the bar. And they must have done it because they just parked and left me with it. My wife would listen to anything I would say about the whole thing, and I left the 2 girls out of it. And the people I hit their house, it was a small issue because the kid I hit his house goes to school with my kid, and there was car parts still there and that sort of thing. So I just went straight up with it. In Philadelphia, too, you call the police, someone hit your house, and they just take a report, and then there'd be a whole insurance thing and that thing. Well, I just went in there and just gave it up. I said, listen, I did that. I have insurance. I have a problem of sort. I'm not telling them I'm an alcoholic. I've only been drinking for 4 months. Are you kidding me? An alcoholic? Christ, I haven't even started yet. And they bought into it, because in Philly, they just turn around and call the cops and say, it's taken care of, because that's how they do things back east. And all was well. The car went to the shop, and everything got taken care of, and the insurance company paid for it without raising my insurance rate. greats, and that was that. And that was the beginning. That is the very beginning of that run. And that run, that whole thing came because when I was in the program for almost, you know, I'm just going to say more than, I'm not going to say almost 11 years, it wasn't even close. For more than 10 years, I didn't do anything, you know. And except for I was just really full of myself, and I was angry. The anger thing, you know, I hate to admit this, but there's this thing you do with anger when you're dry drunk for that long of a time, and it has a lot to do with a tilt wheel on a car. I don't know, these wheels still tilt? And what I would do is I would get pissed off, and I would beat on it. Okay, just like the steering wheel did what made me mad. And I would beat the steering wheel, and then one day I kind of noticed the steering wheel moves a little bit. And the next few days it's moving more. So I take it to a shop, and the guy takes it apart. He's got the mechanism. I know nothing about mechanisms. And he says, "Was this car in an accident?" "No." "Well, this just doesn't happen." Or maybe it wasn't an accident. I'm not sure. Get the car repaired. And that would be that. This went on for 17 years. I moved back here. I had wanted to come back here. My boss here is he really wanted me to come back here. We started together in 89. I said, well, I'll tell you what. I'm going to take a little trip. I got a friend of ours having daughters getting married in Seattle, and I'll spend a few days up there, and then I think I'm going to go from there to San Mateo and hang with a couple friends there, and then I'll come down to Visalia, and I make hotels, you know, I'm like the guy that does the book me, on whatever it would be, and I get all this stuff all planned out and everything like that, and I get off the plane in Seattle, and my friend's getting wedding, whatever they were, and I said, let's stop at the bar. And we stopped at a bar, kind of a dark bar, a little familiar to me. People talked a little different. And it's Shots. And I said, you do have that quart of Jack Daniels I asked you to pick up, didn't you? And I drank that Jack Daniels. And I didn't sleep for 3 days. You know, I drank and I didn't sleep. I was a mess. I became an instant mess. And I take medications, and I ate all those in like a day or two. And I did the wedding. Everything always better in the morning, even though I didn't sleep. I remember leaving Seattle to go to San Mateo, and I was at the bar just really... So my end was coming. I moved back here. Everything was supposed to be okay. And we get into this whole third step thing about third step prayer about how, you know, taking a trip, not taking a trip. And, you know, just to back up a little bit, when I was in my last 6 months of drinking days, I would do things to protect myself, which is a little bit of the third step stuff. I used to duct tape my phone. The phone used to be like loose, and I would make phone calls, and then I would hide the phone from myself and not find it for a while. And then I would tape door handles. That was good. That was a good one. Different stuff like that. And just none of it worked. So I moved here. And things came apart really, really quick. Very quick. I need to get moving along, as the clock says. But I want to think in September, the holiday, I went up to the Bay Area. I went on a couple day drinkathon. I came home. I at the time had a red car. I still have a red car. This one had a big motor, and I'm on 152 getting sick about every, I don't know, 4 miles. So you pull over with this red car with a big motor, and you're getting sick on the side of 152. And my friend, that my sponsor, suggested to me, you should have been arrested 5 times on that trip. You know, I just wanted to feel better. See, that getting sick was part of my recovery process. And I made it through that. I made it through a few things. I've banged into the back of people. I just made it through a lot of stuff. I'm very, very blessed that something, somebody, I prefer to say my higher power, God, has watched over for me. I mean, that's the only reason I'm sitting up here right now talking to you. I've been there and I've been back. And this... this last time out, that was September, I was invited to a couple people, new people working at the terminal that I started at, and it would become half-naked pictures of me in their backyard passing out or whatever it would be. And I think, you know, give or take, I have my days wrong or this, and I think my date is November 26th, but I had gotten really, really hammered on Thanksgiving. My whole plan for Thanksgiving really is to go to bed early. 10 Ambiens will do that. And then I would get up at 3 o'clock and 2, 3 o'clock in the morning, and I would do my Christmas shopping. And I go to the gym at 4 in the morning, and I would go on the way home and get a couple of beers, get back to the Ambiens. And for some reason, the Ambiens thing did not happen. The beers did. I went about and out. I had embarrassed myself in front of one of my neighbors or my neighbors. I kind of really came out and came down about it. I went home. I went to sleep. I woke up the next day. I went to the Ilano Club, and I wasn't looking for a poker game or anything. It was all I knew. It was the only thing I knew about AA was that Ilano Club. And someone had stopped me and said, well, they have an meeting in there, but it is a book study, and you don't look like you need to be at a book study. You need to be at a meeting. And she referred me to Bridge Street, and she gave me the directions, and then she followed me there. I'm right now, I'm on God's will at this time. Okay, I'm not in charge of this whole thing. The only thing I am is a real big mess. It's really, really bad. I am wrecked. I am at the end of everything. So, needless to say, people say I came in the door and I was a lunatic. People say that I came in the door and just talked about, I think David Looper told me one day, you need to stop talking about that cat. We're sick of it. It doesn't make any sense. You're the only person even listening to yourself. It's got to go. I took resentment on that one. And I just, you know, Bridge Street worked. It was the only place I could be. It brought me an enormous... It's like taking weights right off your shoulders. And it doesn't make sense. You could just take a bunch of weights off your shoulders on one day. You know, it just can't be that easy. But the thing was that day, it made me look forward to the next day. Okay, and then the next day became the next day. And I went to every meeting I could. It was the holiday season, and we did things on holiday seasons, and it was a good place for me to be in. And I would go to the morning meeting there, and I would go to the afternoon meeting, and every meeting I could. I think I went to the 10:30 meeting. I think it was on Saturday or Sunday over there on the other side of town, the upper crest. And I sat there for that meeting, and I did my usual breakdown, introducing myself, this and that. And one of the old-timers came up to me, and he says, gee, you know, you want to get together and have coffee at Starbucks with us? And I should be jumping on shit like that, because I love Starbucks. I am... it's sicker than you would think. And I said, no. I want... And I didn't appreciate this man. Not that I didn't tell him I didn't appreciate it. I just didn't appreciate him insinuating that I don't need to go to the noon meeting at Bridge Street. It's really what it came down to. It really was. Because in that Starbucks, even though I am a large investor in Starbucks, I wouldn't have felt comfortable. I wouldn't have felt safe. I needed to feel safe. That's what it was for me. That was going to that meeting, going there, made me feel safe. It was, give or take, I don't know what they say it when you're just kind of on something. And a lot of things that you're on in life like that, they got a fancy name for it, but you know, it doesn't last forever unless you do something. And that's what I ended up with. I think I don't know if it was March, February, whatever it was of the next year, and I don't have a sponsor, but I'm still going to this meeting, but I'm starting to miss something. Something's missing. And I did the the back to the 40s, you know, and it really took a lot for me too, because I drove like two or three people and they were all smokers. And as we drove there, and I obviously don't smoke and I can't stand the smell of it, I'm saying to myself, any length to stay sober, any length, get them in there. And thank God they didn't show up for the second meeting, because it really was bad. But they introduced you to your sponsor. You know, this is your back to the 40s sponsor, and we hooked up. And when I left there, I said, I need your phone number. And he started to tell me, he says, well, this is kind of like, you know, kind of for the back to the 40s. No, your phone number would be good. And he gave me his number. And, you know, we had hooked up. I went over his house. I suffer from something that has to be treated every 5 weeks or so. And I had a new doctor up at the C Center that will be doing it. And I had an appointment with him. And I've had many doctors for this disease. I've had it a long time. But this doctor was thorough, so it was not like I was going to go meet this guy and boom, you're out of there, because I had a time I was going to meet my sponsor at his house. But the guy does all kinds of stuff, and I won't get into any of that graphics, but he needed to know what was going on and what his treatment plan would be. And I kept calling my sponsor and telling him, I said, I'm going to be here at this time, I'll be here at this time, and this is what we're doing. And I finally did make it there, and I remember him saying something at a meeting that he's the only sponsee that I ever had that I forget exactly how he put it. He just took the needle out of his arm for his treatment to get to see me. And we hooked together. He is, you know, from where I'm from. He hung out at the A&W across from where I hung out. He hung out with the good guys. I didn't hang out with anybody good. And we hit it off. And we had a lot of stuff going together. And I kind of leave it, you know. He was good. He brought a lot of attention to me, and I brought a lot of attention to him. And we've been friends ever since. We get together every Saturday, and we eat and we talk about, you know, each other's life and these sort of things. In my first year or two, he had been on me. He'd been there for me whenever I needed it. And a lot of things went on in the first year. The first year, I met my wife. I am a very courageous man. I'm strong and bold. I gave her my phone number and said, if you want to go out, call me. And it worked real well. It actually worked. She straightened everything out from the beginning, and we've been together ever since. You know, we've lost her mom while we were together. I adored her mother. We have a home, and it's real home. We have ankle biters. We have grandchildren that she can take care of now. So there's kids that, you know, they were young and their life is going on, and it's not cheap to take care of children. So she takes care of those twins, and that's good for her. It's good for me. They're adorable. It's a big opportunity because I didn't spend time with my daughter when she was young. When we moved out here and I saw her very little. I moved out there and I saw her very little. So it's kind of, at first the kids were kind of, you know, but now it's a lot of love, and it's a real nice thing to have. I still go to Bridge Street. Everything is good. Work is good. I've worked my way through a lot of things. You know, nothing comes easy. I don't know, there's a lot of calls on my sponsor every time I would back into something with my truck or something stupid, and I think I'm going to get in trouble. I'll call him. It's like he's going to call somebody. Don't get mad at him. No, nothing like that. He just kind of walked me through it and said, you know, this is what it is, and it will pass, you know, and take a look in the book for this, and take a look in the book for that, and it's real good because he's a book person, and I'm not a very good reader. And it's been great. You know, I'm 62 years old, and my life has really, really never been any better than it has been, especially in the last five years or so. It's been really great. There's a daughter. I had a daughter. Anybody mention that to anybody? I had a daughter. I tried to get together at first when I first got sober. In the first 4 months, it didn't work out. I took it very, very hard. I had to go back to Philadelphia to take care of some things early in sobriety. I found a meeting that right around the corner from where I was staying at. I went to that meeting twice a day. I called my sponsor every day. We made her do that sort of thing. And my daughter, I saw my daughter this year? Yeah. Mid this year, my wife had, you know, arranged things and brought it forward and prayed on it. And I didn't know what to expect. I hadn't seen her for years. She'd always been my little girl. I got her a plane ticket, and she's coming into Fresno. And I'm looking at that screen, and I'm freaked out. Got a sponsor on the phone. I'm thinking, wow, how many tattoos is she going to have on her face? How many nose rings? I hope she doesn't have I Hate Daddy on her arm. None of the above. She was delightful. 6 inches taller than she was the last time I saw her. She's a wonderful woman. She loves my wife. She loves our new family. And hopefully next year we will see her here. And I went too long. No penalty for that or nothing like that. All good? All right? Everything fine? And I just want to tell you that I'm just incredibly happy to be here tonight. I'm happy that I did the 3,000 pre-tries of what I was going to say. I think it helped a lot, and I suggest it to you if you need to speak at this meeting. And that's it.